We're going to be talking about freedom next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of our Institute. I almost gave you a field promotion.
Yeah, which I don't think you can do.
I'm the director. I'm not the chairman. And my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Yeah, it's good to be back with you. It's good to have you back here so I'm not stumbling through a program all by myself, which I did last week. I have the ability to do editing, which is a good thing, because it was a fest until I fixed it.
Well, good, good. Well, I'm glad to be back in studio with you here on this beautiful afternoon. We are looking at freedom issues over the next few weeks, ladies and gentlemen, because, you know, we just came out last week from Resurrection Passion Week for those in the Catholic faith. For the rest of us in the Protestant circles, we call it Resurrection Sunday Resurrection Week. And that is where perfect freedom lies, Chuck. Perfect freedom lies in Christ. Perfect freedom lies in the truth of the gospel. Perfect freedom lies in the idea that God sent his son to be the mediator between him and a rebellious humanity so that we may be reunited with God and be called his children. And that is where freedom lies. Or as we talked about in our class at IOTC the other night, just like the Liberty Bell has written across the face of it around the neck, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty.
Yeah.
From Leviticus.
And it was good that one of our students recognized the fact that she brought up the fact that as you walk away from God, your liberty diminishes.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, people can't seem to get that idea. And I said, yeah, well, that's because in the Lord there's liberty. And the fact is that when you walk away from the idea that where the Lord is, there's liberty, what you do is you sell yourself into slavery to another idea. And that other idea is the idea that somehow you can have liberty without God. It looks attractive to a lot of libertarians, and as we explained, what happens when you adopt that libertarian, morally anarchistic view, that is, you can have this liberty, and by liberty, we mean libertinism, the idea mm-hmm. that as long as you we don't do hurt that. Anybody, you can do anything, then eventually what happens takes over is anarchy.
That is true.
And from anarchy always grows despotism.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I always say it this way. If someone is completely consistent with their libertarian framework, that it does lead to complete anarchy, and that invites totalitarianism. Because nature abhors a vacuum, Charles.
And, that's it.
And in the space of complete anarchy, the universe is not designed that way. See, now that's an evolutionistic concept, Charles, that chaos, out of chaos comes order. But that doesn't happen naturally. Out of chaos, out of nothing, God created right. the heavens and the earth, but that was because he is the supreme being and therefore had the power to do so. When man tries to create order out of chaos, what usually happens is an overreach, which creates a worse situation than what you began with, i.e. libertarianism going to anarchy, which then leads to a totalitarian response, trying to restore an order that is intrinsic to our being. We are all, whether we like to believe it or not, Charles, ultimately each and every one of us, deep down, written in our DNA, is the idea of a right order and a right way of doing
things. Well, we seek order. It's funny you bring that up, Barry. I had to laugh. Now, we're not going to talk about this article, but I read an article today that made me laugh as a chemist.
Okay.
Now, these guys who are writing this stuff, or at least relaying it to the reporters who wrote it, are PhDs. And what their claim is that DNA was able to self-organize. And once it's self-organized, it directed the organization of longer chains of itself and directed these other things, this, that, and another thing. Now, if you know anything about chemistry,
okay,
you know that things like, let's talk about things like crystal formation.
Sure.
It doesn't drive itself.
Can't. It has to have a catalyst.
That's right. Not only that, it's not so much that it requires law.
Well, there's that too.
A law has to be in place or those crystals won't form. And DNA, quote unquote, won't self assemble and self direct. There is no self direction. It doesn't direct anything. What that idea is that crystals form following existing physical laws.
Right.
DNA does not write law, and it doesn't make its own organisms. You can throw DNA into a pot and do whatever you want to it. And basically the idea is that if the, quote unquote, the chemical conditions are just right, then this and this and this can happen. Well, what are the exact correct conditions? And if this is true and not just theoretical, throw them in a pot and show me.
I have a more elementary question, Charles. Even if I were to accept
the premise,
yeah, that it can self-organize and self-replicate, where'd it come from in the first place?
Well, where'd the chemicals come from? And how did they, first of all, if you know what DNA is,
It's long chains of amino acids, isn't it?
It's multiple chains. It's a multiple chain, and it's a complex molecule. It's a high-energy molecule because it has a phosphate backbone. But that being said, in order to store up energy, you have to put in energy. So somewhere along the way, yeah, you're asking questions that have been attempting to be answered now since the Neo-Darwinian Revolution started, which was about 1959. In fact, that's why it's called that. Darwinism was in deep trouble until someone came up with Neo-Darwinism, because it became clear that you have to have a mechanism to have all these changes happen, and nobody knew what it was until the discovery of DNA. And then all of a sudden, well, we can adapt Darwinism and completely change it, because it's nothing like Charles Darwin came up with, and do it along the lines of this, of using this chemical that now does everything. So now we're into the bad situation where DNA drives all our behavior, because if it weren't for our DNA, we wouldn't all be thieves or liars or blah 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 blah. It's all built in. There's nothing we can do about it, and therefore why fight it?
Have they found the thief gene yet, Charles?
I don't believe so.
Oh, okay.
It's sort of, there's lots of genes that are out there being posited, and people are talking about them like they actually exist. Nobody knows where they are.
Of course not. But, you know, honestly, that's a little bit off of our topic that
right.
we're going to talk about today. But you know what? That's the beauty about our program. You can get an awful lot of information about an awful lot of issues if you just listen long enough.
That's right.
No, today, Chuck, we're going to be talking about an issue that is on a lot of people's radar, at least I hope it is, because it's extremely important. And contrary to some of the mainstream media, this issue is far from over, far from settled, or far from us seeing the final act of this play, curtain rise. And what I'm talking about is the struggle between traditional values, or what we term in the legislation religious liberties, and homosexual demands for inclusion, equality, preference, you name it. I mean, you can use a lot of different adjectives there. Actually, those are adverbs, aren't they? I take that back.
Our parts of speech. I'm so rusty on my parts of speech.
Okay, so English grammar is not something you're going to get here on this program. But as everybody knows, because there was a huge uproar made about it a week or so ago, the state of Indiana passed what's known as a RFRA, a Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Now, this isn't groundbreaking, and it wasn't earth-shattering. Well, it turned out it was. But it really wasn't in the act, because this is a piece of legislation that not only has been passed by the federal government in 1993, but was also passed by 19 other states before Indiana in the intervening 21 years. But this particular bill passage ignited the fury of the radical homosexual movement, who used that instance to flex their political muscles. And let's not kid ourselves, folks. They've been building political muscle for a lot longer than Christians have. And so, therefore, that's the reason why last Thursday before Good Friday, and might I also add, before the NCAA Final Four basketball tournament was to tip off in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Right.
The Republican-controlled Indiana legislature and then the governor, Mike Pence.
Who has presidential aspirations.
Not anymore.
Yeah, used to have.
Exactly. Decided to punt, and they recalled their just brand new passed RFRA law and decided to, quote, clarify it and fix it. Okay. Now, the problem is they had just passed the bill the week before. Chuck, the ink wasn't dry on the legislation, nor had it taken effect, and we saw any kind of actual experiential data coming from the law before they had to go and rewrite the thing and in a hurry, in a special session, pass a fix bill. Now, many in the social conservative pro-marriage, pro-family movement were excited about the original passage of RFRA, taken aback by the absolute fury of the left that was focused upon this. But you see, the left is feeling their oats right now, Charles. You know, they've won some at the Supreme Court's denial of hearing cases so that they can force gay marriage laws, and I say that in quotes, on a number of states. And they've got another one where they're hoping to force it here in the Midwest. Now, Indiana is, Michigan, Ohio, Tennessee, and Kentucky are in the Sixth Circuit. So Indiana's right. In another circuit.
Right.
But they're taking scalps, or taking trophies, as we called it in the nonprofit world. And this was a big one for them, because what they got Indiana Governor Mike Pence and the Republican legislature to do is fix the law by changing it from a Religious Freedom Act, a RFRA, to what's really in effect an EHEA, which is the Equal Housing and Employment Act, or in other words, the add sexual orientation and gender expression language into your civil rights codes.
So they not only just gutted it, they turned it on its head.
They turned it on its head, exactly. Yeah. Now, it's interesting because we've been looking at this from a number of different angles since this happened last week, and most of the angles that you normally hear from are from the religious or the pro-family aspects, and everybody's got their 2 cents worth about it. And some of those are pretty good, and we're going to talk about a few of those today. But we want to lead with the thought process on this discussion with an article that came out of Reason.com. Now, Reason is a libertarian website, and it's a part of a think tank. I think the Cato Institute has part of this. But these are basically people you wouldn't expect to be, as we consider to be, social conservatives. Libertarians are much more involved in the social expansion of gay rights and in legalizing drugs and things of that nature. You know, if they're truly libertarian, they want the government out of all of it. But even Reason, their website, realizes what just happened.
Right.
And what's wrong with it. Because the title of the article that we're reading from, which was written yesterday, we're recording this on a Wednesday, this was written yesterday. It says, Indiana's revised RFRA law strikes the worst possible balance. And the writer is Shika Dalmia from Reason.com. And I found this very interesting, Chuck, when I read this, because What he basically is saying here is, like, you basically vowed to clarify and fix the new law after major corporations, which included Eli Lilly, the pharmaceutical giant, Walmart, of all places. Now, of course, they were referencing more to the Arkansas RFRA that had also just
passed. Yeah.
But, the, of course, obviously Walmart has big big holdings in Indiana as well, and other major corporations who have drunk the social justice progressivist Kool-Aid in order to get all the accolades as being a wonderful corporate entity. And they have pushed much harder than those people of faith would stand up for their own faith. As a matter of fact, I read one article, it's not in this recent article, but it's in another article, that said that what we have now in today's American culture is that the arbiters and drivers of our social and moral center are now corporations.
Right. They've taken the place of the church.
Exactly. And basically, this article goes on to say that basically these businesses and many caterwauling progressives, I love that term.
Caterwauling, yes, yeah. That's a great one.
Claim that the original law gave religiously inclined business owners a, quote, license to discriminate against gay customers. But the amended law maximizes the damage on both ends. It undermines the rights of religious businesses without protecting gays from discrimination. Well, I wouldn't necessarily agree with reason on that, because having seen these EHEA initiatives being pushed here in Ohio, what they do is they basically weigh on the side of, all you have to do is make a claim that anything that happened to you was because of your sexual orientation or gender identity, and the onus is put on the business owner, the property rental owner, whomever, to defend that they didn't act in a way that was discriminatory. And that's what this bill actually does now. Problem is, RFRAs were designed to say that if you have a sincerely held religious belief, you can't be forced to act against your religious belief.
Right.
And that would have been fine as it was, because, again, and we're going to talk about this in another article a little bit later, the idea of somebody baking you a cake or taking a photograph of your wedding is not your religious belief, but it could be part and parcel of theirs.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
There's so much going on here that people are so confused on, because, unfortunately, our side of the issue, we don't have a central place where you can go and get the information you need to make a correct decision. Unfortunately, a lot of this information should be being talked about from pulpits and is not. And that's where a lot of religious people should be going. And in fact, what's happening now in the church is that a lot of pulpits have been co-opted by this particular thing. Let's talk about this. I want to break it down just for a second.
Sure.
What's happening here is it's a tacitly saying, okay, look, there were certain laws against discrimination, and it mostly had to do with either your national origin or your race. Your national origin, there's not a thing you can do about that.
Right.
If you were born in a certain country, you were born there. Not much you can do about that. It's absolutely nothing that can be done about it. Your race, again, it's a matter of where God placed you. You were born in a certain country because God wanted you to be born in a certain country, and you may have come here because God wanted you to come here. You're born black or Asian or Hispanic or whatever, Alaskan, you know, Aleutian, whatever, because God chose you to be born that way, and discriminating on that basis is not a good thing. And in fact, someone can walk in your door and you can say, well, we don't serve one-eyed Norwegian albinos here.
Right.
Or, you know, whatever. Pick a group.
Right.
If someone is homosexual and walks through your door, how do you know that they're homosexual?
Only if they choose to share that information with me.
If you've got a big gay and proud button on, You've shared it openly with that person as if you're basically daring them to deny you service.
Yes.
Now, many businesses have a sign in the back or behind the counter that says, we reserve the right to deny service to anyone for any reason.
Yes.
I don't like the way you look. I'm not going to sell you a slice of pizza.
I think you're drunk. I'm not going to serve you another round of beer.
Life is about discrimination. There are good kinds of discrimination and bad kinds. And you just described one of the good kinds.
Yes.
We discriminate every day. When I was a young man, I only dated women.
Mm-hmm.
I discriminated against young men who may have been interested in me. I had no interest whatsoever in them. I like women. I discriminated. Okay? I only married a woman.
Yes, and only one, too.
And well, I've had more than one, unfortunately.
But not at the same time.
Not at the same time. Yes, not at the same time. To full disclosure. We discriminate all the time. I bought a house in a neighborhood where I discriminated against houses that were a lot more money because I couldn't afford to pay for it, and a lot less money because I didn't want to live in that neighborhood.
Exactly.
So discrimination is not bad. We've got some kind of an odd idea in the Christian community that discrimination, not just the Christian community, and Christians may be slightly more resistant to this than anybody else, but in the United States in general, that discrimination is always bad. Don't judge me. The old saying, don't judge me. Folks, we judge every day, and we're supposed to judge.
Absolutely.
So, that being said, what they're getting at here is that the sub-headline is gays aren't protected, and businesses are discriminated against.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why. The right to serve whoever you want for whatever reason is a basic human right. And when I say human right, a right given by God in a business.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm going with that, okay. And that's where I think they're going with that.
Well, I'll tell you exactly where they're going to with that, because the reason article does break down what the original RFRA law was supposed to do. It said, for starters, the Hoosier RFRA allowed private individuals to discriminate only when that was absolutely necessary to avoid violating their core religious principles. A Christian restaurant owner's refusal to serve gays wouldn't fit the bill. However, a Jewish baker who refused to make sacramental bread for a Catholic mass, or an evangelical photographer who declined to photograph a gay wedding might, mind you, not would. That's because the law provided merely an argument for courts to weigh when evaluating discrimination complaints against such individuals, not an automatic defense. Judges could still decide that equal treatment was a compelling enough governmental interest that such discriminatory actions against gays are prohibited. In other words, it had an open door in it. It wasn't a perfect bill by any stretch of the imagination. I know the one that Ohio was working on last section actually did create an affirmative defense and was a lot stronger. Now, we will not see that bill coming back up in the Ohio legislature.
Oh, no. Buck, 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 buck,
because
buck, buck.
Of what just happened in Indiana. Yeah. And I know that for certain because I've been told by one of the members who sponsored the bill last session, we're not doing that again.
Yeah, because it requires a backbone, which the Ohio legislature doesn't have.
Okay. But he said, you know, he said there would be an argument to deny business owners even this little space to live by their spiritual sensibilities if the discriminated individuals couldn't obtain the services they needed elsewhere. He says, but discrimination isn't as institutionalized now as it was in the Jim Crow era, because that's the other big shibboleth that's been put out there is this, we're going back to the Jim Crow era laws, against gays. And we're going to talk a little bit more because we've got a great article that really breaks one apart.
Yeah.
But he gets down there and says, you know what? If there is an establishment in town that doesn't want to do your wedding, go to another photographer. Go to another baker. Go online, for goodness sakes.
Look.
You're not limited to your local community anymore. That's the whole beauty of Craigslist, the internet, You know, Google is a search engine. You can find somebody out there who'd be willing to, they'd be willing to come and bake a life-size 6-foot-tall cake for you on premises if the price was right.
I read an article, and I want to assign this to Ted Cruz, but I can't for sure because I don't remember it well enough. I read it on the fly. Essentially, the question that was asked was, okay, let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's take everybody's favorite whipping boy, the Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, yeah.
And let's say they need to have some new God hates and the word.
Just say they put it out there. They said God hates fags.
Yeah. Okay. Let's say they needed to have some new signs printed, and they went to a homosexually owned print shop.
Yeah.
Would that print shop have the right, under this kind of mentality, to say no? Now, if the shoe were really on the other foot, the answer would be no. They would have to serve the Westboro Baptist Church.
But that's not the culture right now. It's not the zeitgeist in the culture. It's you're being intolerant because you're a Christian.
Instead of being a two-way street, like
and the best example of this comes from the Indiana experience, because after the original RFRA had been passed, the biggest voice screaming against this from a corporate standpoint was the CEO of Apple Computers,
Tim Cook.
Tim Cook, who himself is openly homosexual.
Yes.
And threatening to stop doing business in Indiana and not believe blah, 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 you know, the whole nine yards. I guess Apple would shut down all services to iPhones and MacBooks within the state of Indiana, the URLs. You know, okay, sure, Tim, go ahead.
Good luck.
Good luck. Go ahead. But, you know, so he was screaming about people discriminating against their neighbors. And Reason article said, well, this is a horrible caricature. And he says, basically, this is the problem. If corporations merely boycotted Christian businesses whose beliefs they found abhorrent, because that's the whole irony of this thing. What was the big deal to force the legislature to make these changes? Were corporations saying they would boycott doing business in the state of Indiana? But that's exactly the same argument that the Christian business owners were making, that they didn't want to do business with people whose lifestyle was opposed to their religious beliefs. Talk about hypocrisy.
No, But
this is hypocrisy of the pocketbook, Charles. And the Reason article goes on and says, if corporations merely boycotted Christian businesses whose belief they found abhorrent, it would be one thing. But what's truly obnoxious about their campaign was that they were using their right not to do business with Indiana, because it was doing something they disagreed with, to obtain a law that would deny Indiana businesses the same right not to do business with folks whom they don't agree with. This is simply intolerance masquerading as a crusade for justice and equality, a naked use of brute market power to legislate his views. Again, Chuck, I think the article that I read the other day was spot on. We don't have a moral center anymore. We don't have shared morality in this country.
That's right.
What we have is morality given to the loudest, most obnoxious, and highest bidder. You see, all the churches together in Indiana probably couldn't have put, if they would have said, well, we're all going to pack up and move out of Indiana, it wouldn't have had nearly the impact on the Republican legislature as Tim Cook and Apple and Eli Lilly and Walmart saying, we're not going to do business with you. Because really, to a politician, it's all about the money.
Well, yeah, and you know what? Unfortunately, the churches, if they would do so, hold sway in a persuasive manner, not in a dictatorial manner, over a huge voting block. But they won't exercise it because, after all, we live in two kingdoms. And Jesus, we're supposed to maintain a strict neutrality in political matters. And as we all know, there is no such thing as neutrality, and this really brings it out. The fact that the churches, not all of them, but a vast majority of them, are either have surrendered on this issue or are attempting to maintain a neutral footing and are not exercising the control that they have over the voter blocks, there are two things that politicians love: money and votes. And they like the money because it buys them the votes. Now, when you can't buy a vote anymore from an entire block, then what happens? That block gets listened to.
That's right.
Regarding the policies that they want to that they want to see. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the played out in this, the idea that, well, we live in two kingdoms and we have to take this radically neutral position on policy issues, because after all, we live in a natural law environment.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, somebody still has to define exactly what natural law is, and how is it natural law? Because if you go with the argument that natural law is what's written in Romans 1, it's the law written on men's hearts, and the law written on men's hearts is that homosexuality is not right.
Is an aberration.
Exactly.
Right. It's an abomination.
It's an abomination before God. And even in the absence of God, there's something wrong with it. Deeply wrong. Then it needs to be a forbidden behavior for a number of reasons. But that being said, the church has walked away from that responsibility to talk about it. You know why? Because it drives people away. People won't like it. People won't listen to us. Why won't people listen to you? Well, because you're mealy-mouthed on the issue.
That's right.
You don't want to talk about it from a biblical perspective, because that's the only way you can talk about it in a church. And the churches don't know how to talk about it. Well, Jesus didn't actually forbid. He didn't talk about homosexuality. And I say to that, of course he did.
Yeah, absolutely he did.
He did speak about it, because all you have to do is go to the Sermon on the Mount. And that is listed in at least two of the Gospels. Is it in all four? I can't remember. It's not. It is not. But it's essentially it's the same. I come not to change the law, but to fulfill it. In other words, not one jot or tittle will change until the end of the age. That's a reaffirmation of everything that he told us. And he did give us the law in the Old Testament. That is a reaffirmation of the Old Testament law.
Yeah, absolutely.
And whether we like it or not, there's a great argument. Dr. James White, I will post a link to the program. Dr. James White went over this on his program on Tuesday. And he played some audio from a video presentation that was a dramatized play. And he said, this is why the church can't get this right. This person was in a theoretical thing. The person was put on the stand on a mock trial to talk about these issues. And the lawyer asked directly, where did Jesus Christ ever forbid homosexuality? And the person on the stand had to say, well, he didn't directly forbid it. And I said, wrong. He did.
Absolutely
he did directly forbid it. He directly forbid it by saying that the law was still intact. Now, the person said, well, how many times did he condemn divorce? As if that was an argument. Well, you don't look down on divorce. Well, that's a red herring.
It's absolutely a red herring. And by the way, he did.
Yeah, he did. He condemned divorce at least three or four times, and the church condemns divorce. At least the church that's still involved in talking about these kinds of issues.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
In the churches that have adopted a natural law, radical two kingdoms approach, they're not talking about those issues. They wring their hands and say, "Oh, it's awful," and Jesus didn't like it. But really, there's nothing we can do about it. Of course, there's things we can do about it. And that's part of the problem, Barry. The churches don't know how to talk about it anymore. And therefore, mm-hmm. the politicians aren't scared of the churches anymore.
That's right.
That's why Mike Pence, who until recently had presidential aspirations, really he blew it, because there's not a Christian who's paying attention who's going to vote for him in a primary.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, that means he's blown it.
Oh, well, he blew it when he decided to show that he was not willing to stand up for what he said he believed in.
Well, that's right. Now,
And Chuck, I've got some inside baseball. I know that he was talking with a number of national leaders who gave him language he could have used, which he chose not to do.
Yeah, you and I talked about that earlier. You were given the impression that he was listening to these people.
And he might have been, but he basically in the instance in the pressure, because even the NCAA was talking about pulling out, like they really would.
They couldn't possibly.
There was no way they could
have
pulled out.
That's a non-starter.
Pulled out the NCAA finals from Indianapolis, which, you know, where are you going to go inside of 36 hours to get it completely reset up with all the contracts, with all the television,
hotels, everything else.
It wasn't happening.
No, of course it wasn't. That's an empty suit argument.
But again, and Chuck, maybe people of faith, you know, if you can't refuse to give service to somebody whose lifestyle you find abhorrent, perhaps we should start doing it the opposite direction and stop funding the lifestyles by not supporting such corporations as Apple, not shopping at Walmart. Let's just be honest. I can get just as much stuff at Big Lots as I can at Walmart or at numerous other smaller venues. I'll go to UDF, to the convenience store. I might have to pay a little bit more money.
Yeah.
But the point is, I know with many of those are Christian businesses. Why would I go buy my milk at Walmart, who hates my religious viewpoint now,
and has made it clear,
and
that
has
they
made
do.
It, and has made it public that they find it abhorrent, when I can turn around and go to UDF or to some other Christian business and give them my business?
Well, really, what corporations like Apple and Walmart are saying is not so much necessarily that they hate your viewpoint. They're not stating that directly. What they're saying is, well, we don't agree with you, and we have the clout to get done the things that you can't.
That's true.
And therefore, you can't stop dealing with us. This is why these guys are working.
And why do these corporations have such clout? Because we're giving them our money.
Because we give them our money.
To buy their products.
That's exactly right.
We stop buying their products, they don't have the money. And if they don't have the money, guess what they don't have? The clout.
Boycotts work. But they take organization. The problem is there's nobody that we've the radical two kingdom virus basically infects us with the inability to organize to actually run a boycott. Boycotts work. They've worked in the Southern Baptist Convention boycotted for years Disney, and guess what? Disney very quietly acquiesced to everything the Southern Baptist Convention wanted.
Yep, they did.
Now, essentially, the Southern Baptist Convention no longer has the wherewithal to get that kind of stuff done.
Okay, Chuck, this is where we need to put on our logical, biblical thinking caps, okay? For years, the American Family Association, of which I was a state director here in Ohio, used the boycott extremely effectively in helping to push certain elements out of the stream of commerce.
Right.
You know, pornographic magazines, etc., from various venues. It worked because they were able to build a coalition of like-minded individuals. Remember 1 million moms and 1 million dads? That was AFA.
Yep.
Who were willing to stand up and say, for a time, against this entity, we will no longer give support financially. Now, Chuck, that was back in the 80s, the 90s, early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's roll the clock forward to 2015. We are now in a culture where commerce and technology rule everything. As we've just seen in Indiana, commerce can even control your morality. What better time to organize and be effective when they are on such a thin branch?
Oh, absolutely. Part of the beauty of being in the business climate that we're in.
Yes.
And don't kid me that it's not, don't try and tell me it's not providential.
Oh, no, I know it's providential.
The problem is we're not taking advantage of the provident and what God is handing us. But you're right. It wouldn't take very much to, yes, is Apple the most, is the most profitable corporation in the world? Yeah. Do they want to hold on to that? Oh, you don't know how bad they want to hold on to that. How many people not stopping buying songs through iTunes, buying the next iPhone, buying an iWatch, oh, for crying out loud.
Or an iPad or an iPod or a MacBook.
A $600 watch, by the way, that doesn't work unless you have your iPhone in your pocket.
Exactly. It's in that something. But the point is, Chuck, the vast majority of that. Now, the point is, we're not saying you have to give up technology.
Right.
We're saying be creative. Use the brains and the gifts that God has graced you with and find viable alternatives. I have alternatives, Chuck. I don't have to have an iPhone. If I need a smartphone, and I use the word need incorrectly, if I want a smartphone,
right,
I can get an Android. I can get a BlackBerry. I can get a Windows phone.
Yeah.
Now, are each of those corporations probably engaging in things that are probably, you know, antithetical to what I believe in? Possibly. But how many of them have come out publicly and put the pressure on people to kill a piece of legislation that would protect my ability to hold my beliefs and act upon them?
Well, Barry's just walked into my house and he sees what I'm doing in my house. I'm remodeling my house.
Yes.
Now, I bought a lot of the stuff that I bought. I avoided one home improvement store.
Yes, you did, and I know which one it was.
Yes. Can we mention it?
You mean that one with the orange sign?
Yeah, the big orange sign.
The Home Depot
HD
thing? Yeah,
Home Depot.
Yeah, we can mention it.
I avoided Home Depot because they're open about their support for homosexual marriage
and the whole homosexual
agenda. I went down to another place, Menards, because I have no idea what their stand on this stuff is. And the reason I have no idea is because they don't talk about it.
Yeah, because that's not basically the foundation of their business.
That's right. They're about home improvement.
They're like, okay, I don't care if you're building your house to put your wife in or put your husband in, guy. You need lumber and you need trusses,
and
buy them here.
And you know what? I bought my flooring from Lumber Liquidators, because I know they support conservative businesses. Whether they're a conservative corporation or not, I have no idea.
Yeah. Now, why do people go to Chick-fil-A?
Yeah.
Folks, it's the same concept. Yeah, it's easy for that fast food decision. It's a little bit more, it takes a little bit more courage, a little bit more discipline, and a lot more dedication to turn away from some of the big boys, to get rid of the iPhone, to stop the iTunes downloads, to not have the iPad or the iPhone. But you know what? Again, this is one of those situations where if all of a sudden
the Christians.
And I'm not talking to anybody else out there because nobody else matters. That sounds a little harsh, but it's true. Nobody else matters because judgment begins in the house of God. And as part of the house of God, we have to bow the knee to the Lord Jesus. We have to find ourselves in his word and doing what his word tells us to do. Now, does his word tell us to go out and embrace homosexuality? To celebrate it? To normalize it as lifestyle? No, far from it. And we can start through our own personal decisions. You know, first of all, I think every Christian family needs to learn how to talk to their children about this push, because there are a lot of faith leaders and churches out there that are capitulating.
Yes.
Yeah, especially if you're in mainstream, mainline denominations, most of them have already capitulated to this. We need to help our children have an apologetic, because they're going to get pushed if you send them to public school. They're definitely going to get pushed. If they are older and they're going to a public or even a private college that's secular, sectarian, or marginally Christian, it's going to get pushed on them. They have to learn how to defend their faith. And the point is, folks, defending your faith is an awful lot of work.
Yes, yeah. Apologetics is tough.
Apologetics is tough. That's the reason why most people don't engage in it, I
exactly.
think, Charles. But the point is, not engaging in it is the reason why we're seeing the immediate impacts in the culture. Make no mistake, though, regardless of what we're seeing in the culture, Christ's kingdom is growing. It is moving. Christ even promised it himself that his kingdom would be like a mustard seed, which grows and branches and becomes enormous. It's like the seeds that are sown and then come back, and the return is 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold. And there's nothing that's stopping it. We only see dimly through our temporal eyes most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
We need to start looking at it through our spiritual eyes. But we got to love these people into the kingdom. Well, we need to set a standard for them to understand where their actions and their beliefs are keeping them from the kingdom. That's the problem with a lot of churches today. They want to be like the culture.
That they think they have to be like the culture to attract the culture.
And I think that we've got an article here that you came up with that really talks about this from Doug Wilson over at his blog site called Deny Him 70 Times 7. And I think that really gets to right where we're talking about, Chuck, because really, you know, okay, he says, I was recently asked how the radical ethic taught by Jesus, if someone forces you to go with him too, relates to baking a wedding cake for a same-sex mirage ceremony.
Mirage, he always calls
mirage. That's right. One thing, it's not marriage.
Before you go on, one thing I want to say about Wilson. You can say what you will about his particular theology. The man is a wordsmith.
Yeah, he knows what he's
doing. He's really great at eking these issues out.
And he says, and then shortly after that, I saw the meme off to the right floating around somewhere, and thought that it was perhaps time to shine my little flashlight, one of those two battery jobs, on this particular exegetical funny business. And he says, the first thing to deal with is the very glib equation of floral arrangements, wedding cake baking, and photography with carrying a Roman soldier's bag 2 miles instead of one.
Well, let's read the meme off to the right. The meme off to the right is a picture of wedding cakes, and it says, quote, if someone forces you to bake a cake for a gay wedding, bake for them too, Matthew 5:41. That's the meme off to the right.
Yes. And then he says, and then he's got a little quote quip underneath it that says, and if they insist that you deny Christ, then deny him twice. Add some oaths for verisimilitude. Shoot, deny him 70 times 7. He's just showing you the ridiculousness
of the argument,
of the eisegeting and twisting of this scripture in order to fit someone's personal, not biblically informed worldview. And he's talking about this, and he says, you know what, here, this whole idea, he says, back in the day, everyone who saw that civilian carrying the bag would know that the civilian had been pressed into service, and further, there is no sin involved in carrying a bag. The law allowed the Roman soldier to make someone carry his pack for a mile, no more. When the follower of Christ went the second mile, this was a means of assuming the center, taking control of the situation. And he says, when Jesus healed the ear of Malchus, he was doing precisely this sort of thing. The armed entourage came out to arrest him, and Jesus quietly assumed command of it. What Jesus was teaching his disciples was a way, everything else being equal, of assuming the center. When Jesus stood before Pilate, bound and beaten, he was in control of the situation, and Pilate was not. That is one of my favorite passages in the whole of Scripture.
Absolutely.
Is how Jesus schools Pilate by barely saying anything. And if you study that carefully, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to find out that Christ was saying an awful lot.
By saying nothing. Or nearly nothing.
And Pilate knew it, too, and he knew he'd been taken to school. Pilate was the one who got scared. He says, but nobody thinks that this teaching of Christ means that there is never a point of simple resistance. For example, Jesus simply refused to answer Herod at all. Herod wanted Jesus to do a trick. Why didn't Jesus apply his own teaching here and do two tricks? And he says, before counting how many, one or two, we need to reflect for a moment on the nature of the thing being demanded. And right there, Chuck, he goes right to the heart of it. He says, if someone demands that you deny Christ, your duty is not to deny the Lord twice. By this reasoning, Peter would have been an exceptional disciple the night of Christ's betrayal. He denied him three times.
Yeah.
I just went over this with my kids last week. It's great. No one believes that if Roman law required a pinch of incense be offered to the genius of the emperor, then your religious duty before God would be to offer two pinches, or better yet, a fistful. And who thinks that when the sackbut sounded in ancient Babylon, the duty of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was to start bobbing up and down like crazy, falling down before the great image more than anyone else there? Who would pay any attention to a meme that showed a young Quaker walking into boot camp? And if they conscript you for 4 years, sign up for an extra 4-year hitch. As I've already written, this is Doug Wilson talking, this issue is entirely and completely over demand for approval. The homo jihad is not demanding that we agree to function in the same economy together with them. We are more than willing to do that, as we just talked about, buying
That's
their iPhones.
Right.
Rather, they are demanding, not suggesting, that identification of their perversion with sin be made against the law. This includes everyone, everywhere, and it includes pulpits. We haven't even talked about this yet, Chuck, but we had a homosexual rights leader in Colorado last week come out and make the claim and wanting to get the Colorado legislature to make it a law that if a church, which has a nonprofit status, speaks out against homosexuality, that the state would remove their nonprofit status from them.
Well, Canada.
Absolutely, which is already happening in Canada. That's right. But the point, folks, it's here. It's not overseas. It's not to our neighbors to the north. It's in our own backyard. Where are you going to stand? Or are you? That's the real and only question. Are you going to stand? When the history books are written, what's your role? And as believers in Christ, and as followers, as people he has told, occupy until I come, our role is to transform the culture for Christ, not to have ourselves transformed into the culture against Christ. Wilson goes on here and he says, you know what? He goes, so when they say that would never happen, it should be pointed out that Christians are starting to get smart. We don't believe anything you say anymore. So they're demanding that on such occasions where our participation in the same economy becomes tantamount to approval of the sin, and consequently a violation of our conscience, that we be required to violate our conscience. Their lusts trump our conscience. Folks, that's what was wrong with the Indiana RFRA. That's exactly what happened. Instead of saying, you have a conscience right not to engage in something or be participant in something that you see sincerely goes against your deeply held religious convictions, you've now said, not only must you do so, you must willingly and happily do so. And he starts talking about this whole idea. He's like, okay, they've already decided what the public conscience must be like, and they're prepared to enforce it. So take this sentence for a prime example. Quote, when the society at large has determined that blank is a violation of the community standard, then a private citizen may not violate that standard by blank. He says, now, do you agree with that statement? Notice, before you agree, that I conveniently put in blank spots so you couldn't get your partisan frenzy on prematurely. You don't know what the phrases are I'm going to put in there. If you agree with it in order to justify the current homo frenzy, the current two-minute homo hate, then what shall you do when I then say, no, actually, I was talking about race mixing and opening up private restaurants to whites and blacks together, i.e. the Jim Crow issue. And he goes on, he talks about this, but he basically talks about this whole idea. I really strongly suggest you go out and read Doug Wills's. It's Doug Wills, WILS.com. He shortens it to eight letters, Doug, DOUGWILS.com. His blog is called Blog and Mayblog, which is kind of also a takeoff
play on words,
of Gog and Magog. But then he goes down, he goes, you know, the old Jim Crow laws. That's because that's what they're talking about. He says, you know, that these people right here, this entire sexual fracas is a three-dimensional real-time instance of God's reductio ad absurdum, one that he's running on secularism. This is where God is still in control. He's still the center of everything.
Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen. And that's what we wanted to get at. He's still at the center of all this. And God doesn't change. And his yes is yes, and his amen is amen. And his law doesn't alter. Regardless of what you may have been told in certain churches, God doesn't change. And so Wilson says, the reason is straightforward. Secularism is incoherent, like a plane made up of spherical cubes. What has our tolerant state done? Well, they've outlawed discrimination. They are intolerant of intolerance, which means, in effect, the only intolerance they will tolerate as their own is their own, and this on the condition that nobody ever admits out loud what they're actually doing. They've outlawed discrimination, period. The only problem is that law is instantiated discrimination. Law is essentially discriminatory and is that which defines which group is in and which group is out. The only question is which group will be in and which out. There is no possibility of having a law against discrimination that does not itself discriminate. The old Jim Crow laws discriminated against blacks, but at least everybody recognized what they were doing. If confronted about it, they would acknowledge that this was in fact the point. Our new laws are a toxic mixture of the same despotic impulse, along with high levels of epistemic confusion. They must discriminate, but refuse to ever admit that this is what they're doing. But because laws are discriminatory, this is why the foundation of our nation's laws must be the laws of God. And by God, I mean the Father of the Lord Jesus.
Not somebody else.
That's not somebody else.
That's a slap at claiming that Sharia and theonomy are the same things.
He says, and so we have gotten to the point where the few remaining sincere liberals have to be deeply humiliated by the behavior of their homo homies, as he calls them. They have become what they have always professed to detest. And this is a cause of some consternation to the sincere liberals that he talked about earlier. All eight of them. But I bet a clever graphic design guy could make an exclamation point for those coexist bumper stickers out of some lynched evangelical florist. That should fix everything. And if the clever graphic design guy didn't want to design something like that, well, let's just make him, shall we? Folks, whether you agree with Doug Wilson or not, the point is he has made the central point. And that is all laws discriminate. All laws, the nature of our law system is that there are things that are right and things that are wrong. Christ is at the center of it all. He commands the center. Our elected officials may not believe that. The radical homosexual jihadist, I like his term, don't believe that. Corporate heads like Tim Cook at Apple don't believe that. Folks, they've got a real strong comeuppance coming someday soon. But we call on the name of Christ. We take the mantle of Christian. We better believe it, and we better act upon it. Don't be ashamed of your faith. stand up for it, and stand up for your religious freedom. That's where true liberty lies.
God's law or despotism? Well, that's it for this week. We ask that you would join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.